Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
At one of the most famous restaurants in the world, there's a table in the corner where the most incredible conversations on the planet are happening every week, with owner Ruthie Rogers and amazing guests like Martha Stewart.
But I did have an affair with one of his best friends.
Jimmy Fallon.
Do you want a zip line over your dad while he gets attacked by alligators?
And Paul McCartney.
John and I hitchhiked to Paris.
We've saved you a seat. Ruthie's Table 4. Listen to Ruthie's Table 4 on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This Day in History class is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, and welcome to This Day in History class, a dramatic reading of the notes I took in my middle school history class some 20 years ago. I'm Gabe Lousier, and thankfully none of what I just said was true. This is a more or less normal history show, and in this episode, we're looking at the story of a much better April Fool's prank. It's the day when the BBC convinced its viewers that pasta wasn't made from flour and water, but actually grows on trees. The day was April 1st, 1957. As an April Fool's Day prank, the British Broadcasting Corporation aired a made-up report about harvesting spaghetti from trees. The three-minute segment was played completely straight, with no indication it was a hoax, besides the little-known fact that spaghetti does not grow on trees. The report, which was narrated by revered broadcaster Richard Dimbleby, followed a family from Ticino, in the south of Switzerland, as they set about their annual spaghetti harvest. They're shown plucking strands of fresh spaghetti noodles from a tree, and then laying them out on tarps to dry in the sun. The BBC's spaghetti hoax is one of the earliest examples of a TV broadcast being used to play an April Fool's joke, but when it first aired, not everyone was laughing. The mastermind behind the prank was a BBC cameraman named Charles de Jager, and amazingly, he had been planning the joke since childhood. De Jager was born in Vienna on February 27, 1911. Growing up, he had a schoolteacher who often teased the class by saying they were so gullible they'd even believe that spaghetti grows on trees. For whatever reason, that visual stuck with de Jager well into adulthood. One of his earliest jobs was working as a freelance photographer in Austria. Then, in the 1930s, he moved to Britain and began working for the Free French Film Unit during World War II. He joined the BBC in July of 1943, taking a job as a sub-editor for Central European News Reports. 5 years later, he became a newsreel cameraman for the BBC, the first at the network to film outside of the United Kingdom. It was during these years that de Jager developed a reputation for his sense of humor. For example, the BBC once sent him to the Vatican to interview Pope Pius XII. He had a hard time setting up the interview, but was eventually told by a priest that His Holiness would meet with him on Tuesday afternoon. De Jager jokingly replied, "Yes, but is he a man of his word?" The cameraman was eager to bring his comedy to the airwaves as well. He never forgot the idea of a spaghetti tree, and was convinced it would make a perfect visual joke for April Fool's Day. But try as he might to sell the idea, and he did try several times, none of his bosses at the BBC would ever sign off on it. That is, until 1957, when De Jager began working as a cameraman for the current affairs show, Panorama. At the time, it was the biggest news program on British television, drawing about 10 million viewers every Monday night at 8. The show's catchphrase was "A Window on the World," and it was De Jager's job as the traveling cameraman to provide that window. He was well suited to foreign assignments, as he was fluent not only in English and German, but in French and Italian as well. In early spring of 1957, De Jager realized that April 1st happened to fall on a Monday that year, the same day when Panorama aired new episodes. He couldn't let the chance slip by without trying, so once again, he pitched his spaghetti prank to the network. This time, though, he wasn't alone. One of his colleagues, a writer named David Wheeler, agreed to write the narration for the project and helped De Jager pitch the idea to Michael Peacock, the lead editor on Panorama. They emphasized how little the segment would cost to produce, since De Jager was already scheduled on an assignment in Switzerland in the coming weeks. Wheeler could write the script, and De Jager could shoot the footage alongside his other project. Peacock was convinced, and gave them the go-ahead to stage one of the first major pranks in TV history. Armed with a budget of just £100, De Jager traveled to Switzerland in March and began searching for a location that would work as a convincing spaghetti orchard. With help from the Swiss tourist office, he finally found a suitable spot, a grove of evergreen laurel trees along the shore of Lake Lugano. De Jager bought £20 of uncooked homemade spaghetti and placed it between wet cloths to keep it from drying out before it was time to shoot. Next, he hired a group of local young women to appear in the segment. He asked them to come dressed in the traditional clothing of their region, and when they arrived, he had them hang the spaghetti from tree branches. Once all the noodles were in place, De Jager filmed the girls as they climbed ladders carrying wicker baskets, which they then loaded up with fresh-picked spaghetti noodles. When he got all the footage he needed of the actual harvest, De Jager organized a spaghetti feast for the actors, and then filmed them enjoying the fruits of their labor. That footage was sent back to London, where it was edited down to just under 3 minutes. Music was added to the background to set the mood, and the tongue-in-cheek narration that David Wheeler wrote was recorded and synced to the footage. The narration itself was read by Richard Dimbleby, a well-respected figure who had anchored Panorama for the last 3 years. His participation in the prank is a big reason why so many viewers ultimately fell for the joke. As one of the host's colleagues put it, quote, "Dimbleby had enough gravitas to float an aircraft carrier." So when he told the public that, in Switzerland, spaghetti grows on trees, many people at home figured it had to be true. Michael Peacock had signed off on the prank, but he didn't let anyone else at the BBC know that until the last possible minute. After all, if any higher-ups heard about the plan before airtime, they might put their foot down and cancel the whole thing. So as far as most people at the network knew, the show would have only 3 segments that night: a lengthy story about the leader of the Church of Cyprus, a clip of the Duke of Edinburgh attending the premiere of a war movie, and a short feature about a wine tasting contest. However, after the 3rd segment finished, there were still about 3 minutes left in the time slot. That's when Richard Dimbleby looked straight into the camera, and with a straight face, introduced the real last story of the evening. He said, quote, "And now from wine to food. We end Panorama tonight with a special report from the Swiss Alps." The screen then cut to De Jager's footage, and from a trusted voice, viewers at home heard the following report.
"Here in the Ticino, on the borders of Switzerland and Italy, The slopes overlooking Lake Lugano have already burst into flower, at least a fortnight earlier than usual. But what, you may ask, has the early and welcome arrival of bees and blossom to do with food? It's resulted in an exceptionally heavy spaghetti crop. The last 2 weeks of March are an anxious time for the spaghetti farmer. There's always the chance of a late frost, which, while not entirely ruining the crop, generally impairs the flavor and makes it difficult for him to obtain top prices in world markets. But now these dangers are over, and the spaghetti harvest goes forward. Spaghetti cultivation here in Switzerland is not, of course, carried out on anything like the tremendous scale of the Italian industry. For the Swiss, however, it tends to be more of a family affair. Another reason why this may be a bumper year lies in the virtual disappearance of the spaghetti weevil, the tiny creature whose depredations have caused much concern in the past. After picking, the spaghetti is laid out to dry in the warm alpine sun. Many people are often puzzled by the fact that spaghetti is produced at such uniform length, but this is the result of many years of patient endeavor by plant breeders who've succeeded in producing the perfect spaghetti. And now the harvest is marked by a traditional meal. Toasts to the new crop are drunk in these boccalinos, and then the waiters enter bearing the ceremonial dish, and it is, of course, spaghetti, picked earlier in the day, dried in the sun, and so brought fresh from garden to table at the very peak of condition. For those who love this dish, there's nothing like real homegrown spaghetti.
When the segment ended, the show cut back to Dimbleby one last time. He said, quote, "Now we say goodnight on this first day of April." He was trying to emphasize the date to make sure viewers got the joke, but it still went over some people's heads. As soon as the episode ended, hundreds of viewers began calling the BBC. Peacock's boss, Leonard Mial, later recounted the scene in the BBC's telephone exchange that night. He said, quote, "The calls came in incessantly. Some were from viewers who had enjoyed the joke, including one from Bristol, who complained that spaghetti didn't grow vertically, it grew horizontally. But mainly, the calls were requests for the BBC to settle family arguments. The husband knew it must be true that spaghetti grew on a bush because Richard Dimbleby had said so. And the wife knew it was made with flour and water, but neither could convince the other." That may sound ridiculous, and it is. But to be fair, spaghetti and many other kinds of pasta weren't widely eaten in the UK until the following decade. Canned spaghetti was likely the only kind you'd find at a British market, so the food's origin wasn't immediately obvious, especially without a list of ingredients. I mean, most people could probably still guess that what was in the can didn't come from a tree, but not everyone is that discerning. Viewers continued calling the BBC about the hoax for the rest of the month. Most of them just wanted to know how they could start growing spaghetti themselves. In fact, the BBC got so many calls from people asking how to grow a spaghetti tree that the operators eventually settled on a standard reply. They instructed all aspiring spaghetti farmers to, quote, "place a sprig of spaghetti in a tin of tomato sauce and hope for the best." That said, some viewers did criticize the network for airing a fictional story during what was billed as a factual news program. But David Wheeler, the man who wrote the script, long maintained that the spaghetti hoax was ultimately for the viewer's own good. In 2004, he told the BBC, quote, "I think it was a good idea for people to be aware they couldn't believe everything they saw on the television, and that they ought to adopt a slightly critical attitude to it." In that sense, the spaghetti tree hoax taught TV viewers an important lesson in those early days of the medium. Just because it's on TV doesn't mean it's true. All these years later, that same need for a critical mindset now extends to cable news and to pretty much all of the internet. Misinformation abounds, more accessible and more convincing than any other time before. That's why the story of the BBC's spaghetti prank is still relevant today. It reminds us that if we want to avoid falling for something as silly as spaghetti growing on trees, we have to use our heads instead of just going with our gut. I'm Gabe Lussier, and hopefully you now know a little more about spaghetti history today than you did yesterday. If you enjoyed today's show, you can learn more about the topic by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at TDIHCShow. You can also rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, or you can write to us directly at thisday@iheartmedia.com. Thanks to Chandler Mays for producing the show, and thank you for listening. I'll see you back here again soon for another day in history class.